Hi there and welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
Hello everybody, Matt Walsh here with the ESPN Footy Podcast. Welcome to Draft Week. Biggest night of these young players' lives is rapidly approaching, and ESPN's resident draft expert Chris Dorrie has been going hammer and tong, getting across the latest news and rumours ahead of footy Christmas. A few sleepless nights ahead, Chris, because this is the biggest time of the year for you and what you do.
Yeah, I'll certainly have a lot of late nights. It's really just collecting as much information as I can in the lead up and really trying to find out really who's going to go where. So there'll be more information as the days progress. So it'll be interesting to see where they all end.
Well, we are looking forward to draft nights, Jake, over two nights this year. What are your thoughts on the whole process and what we can expect from this week?
Yeah, I was saying to you guys, I don't mind it being over two days or two nights. And I think now that we really have got a really understanding and the clubs have got used to the whole pick swapping and all of that sort of stuff, the futures, I think it adds a little bit more excitement to the draft. Otherwise, it in the past has been a little bit sort of dry. Some people might say that about the Brownlow medal, and I enjoy that, as you guys know. But yeah, looking forward to it. I think probably not as much as our good friend Chris, but yeah, I think it'll be exciting. And I mean, it's always, we say it every year, but it's that one sort of window where every club, no matter how bad your club is and how poor your season's been, there's always the hope and there's the excitement of getting a couple of new players in and seeing what they're like. And I think, yeah, for every footy fan out there, even Melbourne fans, like every club's going to bring in new players and it's exciting to see what they can do.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it, Jake? It's if you're the worst teams, you've got the better chances of getting the best kids. So there's a level of interest for everyone. You're right. You could pick up the next star of the competition and it doesn't necessarily need to come in the first few picks. And we will get to those picks. We'll go through, Chris, with you a bit of a round one phantom draft a little bit later. But we spoke with you about a month ago or so in October, just after the grand final, about the upcoming trade and free agency period. And then we sort of threw a little bit forward to the draft and what we could expect. But look, a lot changes in footy in days or hours even, let alone a month or weeks. What has changed since we last spoke? Because I think when we spoke last, the combines were just happening in that week or something like that. But what's been the process for these kids in the last 4 weeks or so?
Yeah, sure. So we've had the remaining combines, of course, conclude. And then we've also had the skills session as well recently. So lots of player interviews happening. So it's really, I guess, all the clubs doing their last minute due diligence, particularly with, I guess you could say, the lockdown sort of drawing to an end, hopefully for most of us. There have been those sort of opportunities to really get a bit more contact with the players as well, which has been good for the clubs as they finalize their orders.
These interviews,
you can't underestimate how valuable that is. Like, it's something that pretty much couldn't happen last year.
Having the contact with players.
Yeah.
Well, I talked to recruiters last year, and this is during when Victoria had those two really long lockdowns, and they said they've had one chance to look at some of these kids up until the combine, and because everything was pushed back a little. There was a little bit of time, but there was just such an unknown. Even this year, the Vic Metro and the Vic Country combines were held. I think they just sort of got away when things started to ease up. And then, as you said, Chris, this skills session that they've just had, but I'm sure clubs have been scrambling to sort of get to these players and actually get a feel for what their personalities are like and how they might match with the club culture and all that sort of stuff. Like, do you know what sort of things get asked in these sessions? Is it about asking about, you know, the family life and how close they are to their family, if they feel like they might draft someone going interstate? Like, what are the sort of questions that you can kind of get in these things?
Yeah, certainly in terms of the interstate stuff, that's always a common question, but you do get some really sort of interesting.
What are they
questions.
Looking for as an answer? I'm not close to my family. I'm happy to go.
Yeah, pretty much. They obviously want to know, will the player be willing to travel and all that? But like, you get some really interesting, quirky questions. I'm not privy to the precise nature of them, and there's some really oddball ones, but it's really to get down to, I guess, the essence of who they are as a person. Oftentimes, and how they would fit into that club environment.
Because it's almost like buying a car, Jake, in that, yeah, sure, you can take it for a little test run, but it's not, you're going to live with the car every day for the next however many years. Yep. You don't know how it's going to perform under pressure or on really hot days or on really cold days. Like, clubs do take a punt on players that they might not have seen a hell of a lot of.
100%. And drafting in any sport, not just footy, every single sport that has a drafting... drafting mechanism, I guess, for young players to come into the sport, it's a gamble. Like, it's a risk. There's no guarantee on anything. And we've spoken about it a lot. I've always thought that number one and really high-end picks are almost overvalued in the sense that it is a gamble. I would rather a player that's a proven player than a pick that's an unknown. And going back to last year, when you add in even further unknown as to you have a tiny bit of tape on these players, you pretty much can't meet them face to face. As you say, the talent is probably only a certain percentage of the equation. There's a lot of other things. And as you say, particularly if you are an interstate club looking or a club looking to draft a player from interstate, there's so many factors to go into it. And I'd love to know some of the questions. I think we should chase this up. We should try and get an idea of some of these questions that actually get asked in these interviews.
Yeah, we should. Absolutely. Chris, some of these players, as we said, there would have been minimal tape on them last year and then, you know, very little tape on them this year as well. So that's, you know, there's a lot of unknowns going into this draft. And we did touch on this last time we spoke. So how much would recruiters and clubs have learned in the 18 months prior to the last month, and how much are they going to learn? Is it almost the same amount they're going to learn in the last 4 weeks before draft night, given they've finally been able to get access to some of these players?
Clubs should be mostly settled on their orders ultimately, where predominantly they're judging them on what they're doing on the football field. So in terms of testing, it's really just to, I guess, confirm some of the things they're seeing on the field, and really with the interviews, just to, I guess, tick off the boxes and make sure they would be a fit in the club ultimately.
So what is the thinking going into these last couple of days then? Because things will continue to change right up until players' names are read out, because there's obviously the introduction of live pick trading and other bits and pieces, which we'll get into a little bit later. But what changes between now and draft night?
Sure. So there's really just that absolute finalization of the draft orders, really figuring out, okay, who are we really going to have on our shortlist for each of these picks? And if we're going to get involved in trading, do we move up, down? Who are some of the targets? What is some of the contingencies? Because ultimately, there'll be some sliders in each draft. And with the evenness this year, there'll be quite a bit of that. So I think there'll be quite a lot of really clubs looking to move up. Maybe it's into the second round, maybe late first round. But I think particularly in that second round region, there'll be quite a lot of activity. And it could be some clubs, maybe they're disappointed someone isn't there. So they might be willing to move into maybe next year's draft or move back in the draft to move up next year. So there'll be a bit of that happening as well.
You mentioned sliders. There are going to be late bolters and late sliders. There always is every year. What's the late mail that you're hearing? Is there anyone sort of set to come from the clouds, or is there anyone that you sort of took a look at in May and thought, geez, they're first round caliber, but maybe they're not in that thinking anymore?
There's some that I'm actually surprised are now in the first round mix, but they're firmly in the mix. Blake Howes is one where Sandringham Dragon, about a 190 centimeter sort of tall wing, tall sort of forward. He can possibly go back as well. So he's one where he's really entered that first round mix quite firmly in the latter part. Campbell Chesser could be a first rounder, even though during the year he hasn't necessarily dominated. And also
sorry to cut you off, but why would that be? Why would some of these players just all of a sudden, what is it? Is it the position they play? Is it the last time they saw them, they happen to play really well? Like, why?
Ultimately, we don't know what the recruiters are thinking. So for me, I don't know everyone who's going to be on their draft board. And another as well, we've got young Warner. So the brother of Warner at Sydney. So he's also in that first round mix as well, potentially. And he's one where I wasn't certainly expecting him to be viewed that highly. So just being in that first round discussion, there are those, I guess it's more, we don't necessarily expect them to be rated as highly as they do. And we're really just, I guess, finding out some of those things now as we really lead up to the draft, where there are those, I guess, stronger rumors as to who each club are potentially shortlisting.
If that happens, then it's sort of, if there are the half a dozen players that are sort of pushing their way into the first round contention, then who are the ones that are sort of dropping out?
Probably Matthew Roberts is one where, certainly in terms of earlier in the year, I've had him very high on my draft board, but ultimately sort of coming back mid-year from injury, not really having as strong of a latter part of the year, not going as well during the under-19 champs, he's one. And there's a few others for similar reasons where they've only just slightly maybe been edged out, or they could still potentially be in that first round mix as well.
It's exactly my point is that, so someone like Matthew Roberts, who I've seen the name a lot with everything that you've been producing throughout the year, and I think even going back to last year to it, it's a name that rings a bell. So he obviously started the season well, and I didn't know he was injured, but if he's got injured, hasn't been able to get back to full fitness, and he's sort of tailed off. Whereas, so we know what his ability is, but he's a faller, he's a slider in the draft. Whereas some of these other players, they haven't proven that they can do what Matthew Roberts can do, but they're going to go ahead of him most likely. Yeah. That to me, and there's is a lot the, of things, the unnecessary risk that clubs do take.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other things that come into consideration as well, where you really need to look at the rate of improvement. So Carlton fans out there would be aware of Patrick Cripps and his success, where he was a pick 14. It was a surprise at the time to see him go that high. And because of that really late growth, he's one where he's really blossomed at AFL level and really become phenomenal. So, and you can also have other stories, conversely, where you've got these really early bloomers. And with a Roberts, he was dominating last year as well. And we haven't necessarily seen that same rate of improvement. Or I could even look at a Josh Rochelle. Look, he's going to be a top 10 pick on draft day. But he's someone where going back a couple of years ago to 2019, when we were last watching the NAB League before this year, well, he was going really well in the NAB League. So he hasn't really necessarily had to improve as much as a lot of these others who have really come from a much lower baseline and are now really quite good footballers. So there is that part of the equation as well as just being good now.
We talked about some players that are, you know, were in one round contention and now have slid out and sort of how the, you know, they're kind of going, there's a few players on the periphery of either side of that. We talked about it a little bit last time, but for those that didn't listen to that podcast, how deep is this draft? What do you think the quality is like at these second and third and fourth rounds? Like, where's the point where you think you're going to get a really good player? And then up until about this point, then it becomes a bit more of a gamble, as Jake says.
Yeah. So there's always tiers ultimately to the draft. So you've got the clear top two. I'd probably have Darcy as a third. From there, you've got the next sort of, you could call it seven or so. And then there's a real evenness, I'd say almost all the way to about pick 40. So really, if you've got anything in the second round, you could really get quite a lot of value. And in the second round, it might be a bit like 2009, where you've got the likes of whether it's a Fife at 20, a Gawn at 32, you can really get those almost first round quality guys in the second round, I think, this year. But
and that's
on the other hand,
where it does become a bit of a gamble. Like, yeah, you know, there are going to be clubs that just, you know, there's going to be a three or four players like that that turn out to be stars, and there's probably going to be a few that play one or two games and that's it. So it's a lot of it does come, like, you can do your due diligence and everything and you can do everything, but at the end of the day, like, you just never know.
We talked about bidding and live pick trading. There's a lot of elements to draft night, especially over the last few years. Things have changed pretty rapidly in this space. We know that there's going to be bids coming for, as you said, Chris, two of the best three on the board, purely born out of the fact that one's there's two father sons there. Can we kind of recap what happens on draft night? What's allowed, what's not allowed? Because obviously we can trade picks up until, clubs can trade picks up until they are ready to read out a name and the clock expires. But what can't clubs do on draft night?
Sure. So there's no more trading there's no trading of players. Ultimately, we had that during the trade period, but you can trade picks. So if a player's already been chosen with a pick, there's no trading of that. But picks that haven't been used and also picks for next year's draft are available to be traded. So we've got all that there.
Yeah, it's only next year, right? You can't be trading picks drafts away. Yeah.
This isn't the NBA where you can go 4 or 5 years from now. It's really
serious question. Do you think we will get to that stage at some point?
There's definitely a possibility of it, because ultimately it creates a bit more ease of player movement, which is always something that I guess there's always further pushes for. So I do believe that will be the case. I don't think it's imminent by any means, but I do think that eventually we'll transition towards something more like that. So I think we'll eventually sort of move one more year, and we'll see a bit more of that.
You mentioned that there's the top two or three players and then maybe the next seven. So there's a pretty solid top 10. And then from there, the list is pretty even up until 40-ish, as you said before. Does that mean that we anticipate there could become a bit of a live trade or a bidding war for some of those players just on the periphery of that 8, 9, 10? Do you sort of see that, you know, Fremantle, two picks in the top 10, could they want to move up potentially to a third or a fourth pick to get one of these players? Or could you see maybe like a Brisbane that has two picks in the first round, try and get to that 10 spot and snag a good player or a player that might be better than what they can get at 16 or 18 or whatever their pick is?
Yeah, there's definitely a possibility. And look, there's even clubs in the top 10 that really want to move up. That's going to be hard really making that happen, because those teams that are that high up are really attached to that. So maybe Adelaide, if they feel they can still get a Rochelle a few picks back, maybe they're open to moving back a few. But ultimately, I think probably in that 11 plus range, you're really going to get quite a few moves. And then particularly early second round, where of course we've got the second night of the national draft, and there'll be a lot of clubs really wanting those early picks in that range, because there'll be sort of time, I guess, to have a think about overnight, really, what sort of trades can we manufacture based on, I guess, who went first round. So there's those possibilities around that too. So I think actually it's more the second round that there'll be a lot of movement. The first round, I think there could be a few trades happening, certainly.
Are there clubs that are better at this than others, Chris? I mean, we kind of see Sydney's name pop up a bit when it comes to live trading, and they're just doing very sort of what look like minor pick swaps here and there on the night. But eventually it leads to something a lot bigger. Or you see a club like Carlton and they'll slide up to pick someone like Liam Stocker, who we saw a bit of this year, Jake, for the Blues. Are there clubs that you find have a better tactical nous for this than others?
Honestly, not really. And look, okay. GWS did a great job recognizing Treloar out, Collingwood probably going to drop. They did really well getting what ended up being pick two in this year's draft. But ultimately, it's really more clubs looking to get to specific points in the draft based on there might be a particular slider that represents really strong value. So they might really pay a premium in terms of maybe its future picks to get to that spot. And you might alternatively have picks where there might not necessarily be the guy you're targeting. So you might be willing to move back and still get the same guy or even move out into next year's draft. So particularly in that sort of second round onwards region, there'll be a lot of that, I would imagine, this year again.
Well, as we said off the top, your final Phantom draft is coming tomorrow. I think depending on when you're listening to this, that's today or it's Tuesday, but ahead of the draft on Wednesday. Like we said, Chris has done a ton of work for ESPN over the last few weeks, especially his power rankings from November is live. His Phantom draft will be up soon. And let's differentiate between the two because they are different, Jake.
Yeah, the power rankings. A lot of people ask the question, what's the difference? So the platform is yours to explain it.
Sure. Yeah, so the power rankings is simply where I personally rate them, and there is zero relationship with what the clubs are thinking. Whereas the Phantom draft is purely and simply where I believe players will feature on draft day. That's the most simple way of putting it.
Well, without further ado, let's see what your thinking is right now with a first round Phantom draft. This is, of course, all subject to change in coming days as things progress and rumors emanate and clubs' thinking changes. But run us through those first three picks, Chris.
Sure. So North Melbourne, I believe, will be taking Jason Horne-Francis, consensus number one. That's pretty clear now. And then GWS are on the board at two. I believe they'll be making most likely two bids. So you've got Sam Darcy, you've got Nick Dacos. Yep. There's some talk they might be taking Darcy first out of those two. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But for me, they're a clear top three.
Is there is it 100% guarantee that if they are to bid on Sam Darcy, the Dogs, is there any chance in hell that they don't match it?
Yeah, they're definitely going to match. They're not going to want to be giving up on someone who some recruiters believe is the best talent.
Why bother picking them if they're going to be matched?
So why bid on them? If they're the best player available, you generally want to keep that other club accountable. So,
if
they're the best player there,
make them spend as much money points
back
as they
the other
can.
Club. Because ultimately, if no one ever bids on a player, well, they're going to get a bargain ultimately with a pick they don't deserve to.
No, that's fair. That's a good point.
So then who were the Giants, third time lucky? Who are they picking at pick four?
Yeah, so assuming they hold the pick, and I believe they will, most likely I'd be suggesting probably Finn Callahan, who a lot of people are really looking to move up to really get at that pick. So there's a lot of excitement among those clubs behind them, really hoping to get there. But I don't think it'll happen.
It must be a little bit stiff for the Giants because they have managed to snag pick two, but they're essentially falling out of that clear-cut top three and into the 4-10 bracket that you're talking about. So if there was ever a year to probably move away from a high pick, it's this year. But, I mean, every other club's probably looking at that and saying, well, pick two is really a pick four anyway. Yeah. So it's just an unlucky turn of events for them, I guess.
Yeah. If you do want to learn more about these names, literally just whack it into Google. Their name, ESPN. AFL draft, and there'll be stuff by Chris, literally the first things that pop up on Google. So if you want to know more about Finn Callahan, Darcy, Dacos, Horn Francis, any of these guys that you hear of, just whack their names, ESPN and AFL draft into Google, and it'll steer you to myriad works of Chris Dorey, who's been doing some great stuff for us. Chris, Gold Coast Suns, pick five, where are we thinking that's going to go?
Yes, I think probably Mac Andrew is the pick there at this stage, it's sounding like. So ruckman, high leaper, probably starts his career as a key position player, but very talented. A lot of clubs would love to have him.
The Crows then at six, do you anticipate them holding that pick and using it?
Yeah, most likely, though they may consider moving back if the offer's right. But I think probably Josh Rochelle is the pick there. So he can play forward, midfield, incredible kick, good talent.
He is South Australian, right?
No, Victorian.
Oh. Victorian, okay.
He must have interviewed well, Jake.
Hawks. Yep. Must not like his family.
So for the Hawks, Josh Ward is probably my pick at the moment, though they'll have Matthew Johnson in consideration as well with that pick. So they're probably the two I'm weighing up tonight as to who I'll finalize with that pick.
Well, stay tuned at ESPN.com.au/.
Do you get really disappointed on draft night if you've kind of 50-50ing two players and you get it wrong?
Yeah, it can happen that way. It certainly happens that way. So, yeah, sadly, yeah, it just, yeah. It's always frustrating, but, yeah, you can't help it sometimes.
Fremantle.
So, Fremantle. I think probably Nisiah Wanganeen-Malira would be a chance. So, Fremantle need that outside spark. So, I think he's one that could possibly provide that with that pick. But they could also be considering a Mac Andrew if he drops, or a Hobbs potentially as a midfielder.
Sure. Nine, Tigers. That's their highest pick for some time.
Probably a Ben Hobbs, I think, just as that midfielder. They really lack that sort of inside ball winner, so I think he'd be a good chance there. He's been interviewed a few times by them, so there's quite a bit of interest there.
And the Dockers are at 10 again once the first two bids have been matched. Is it as simple as just saying, take him to the bank, take 8 and 10, draft whoever you want, or do you, once you've got someone like Wanganeen Malera at 8, do you go, well, we've got our guy that we really wanted, we'll entertain some offers for this pick 10?
They could possibly move back, but we'll have to wait and see what happens. Most likely they hold the pick unless there's a really strong offer and someone really keen to move up. Bit unsure at this stage on who I'll have, but probably Matthew Johnson at this stage, where there's quite a bit of early interest. So I think as a tall midfielder, I think he's a chance there. But there's a few others where we've got Gota, Erasmus. So Erasmus is another Western Australian midfielder, and you've got Amiss as well as a key forward. So there's someone having the mix there.
If that is to be the 10, how many of those guys, how many of that 10 would be likely be playing in the first sort of 2 to 3 weeks of next season? How many are ready to go?
I'd say certainly Horn, Francis and Dacos should be really locks unless there's an injury for round one. Rochelle could be a chance, Ward could be a chance, and Hobbs is pretty ready to go as well. So they're probably the ones I'd be saying they should be playing very early on. So
fair enough. The Saints at 11.
Saints, possibly Josh Gibkiss. So they're a bit short in defense after some recent list moves. So yeah, I think possibly Gibkiss, if he makes it through as a key defender, could be likely there, but also I'd say possibly a Josh Sinn would be a chance as well.
The Eagles initially had the pick 10, but after some sliding there, they'd be having pick 12. Where do we see them going?
Yep. So possibly a Josh Sinn if he makes it through, though Josh Gota would be another that'd be considering, and another local Neil Erasmus, and Matthew Johnson if he makes it through as well would be a chance. So there are a few names.
Do you find over the years of having watched drafts, do you find that clubs from interstate sometimes do reach for local talent a little bit?
Depends on where. Not as much as you'd necessarily think. They're often pretty keen to explore really the best player, which is quite often someone not from their state. So
if there's two, though, if it comes down to two, and there's a Western Australian and a Victorian, and it's Freo picking, and as talent wise they're the same, everything's the same. It's just where they're from. You got to feel they're going to go for the homegrown player. I mean, it's just it's all comes down to risk. It's just riskier taking a player from that's a 3.5 hour flight away.
Yeah, and you're definitely right there. But interestingly, Fremantle have really taken quite a lot of Victorians and interstaters recently. So look, it's not too heavy of a bias, but you do have to have the right players that fill the right needs generally for that to happen. So
moving down the board, the Bombers are next.
So I've got Josh Gota. If he makes it this far, he'd be in the mix. But otherwise, yeah, we'll have to see if there's maybe another notable slider. That could also be a potential option there as well.
The Power?
I've got Neil Erasmus. And again, he could go a few picks early.
About three times already.
Yeah, so he's been one where he's been in the mix for a few picks. And there's a few clubs, no doubt, a bit earlier that will be considering him. But yeah, certainly if he makes it through to Port Adelaide, I think he represents really strong value and he could be that long-term strong midfielder through there.
The Giants are after the Power. Where do you see them heading?
Yeah, so there's a chance that they go Blake Howes. So assuming they retain that pick two, which it's going to be hard really to move up. His mate's with Callahan, so I think maybe they sort of play that card and give that some consideration. But there'll be a few teams sort of in the next few picks as well that would consider Howes if GWS don't pick him.
Mm. The Lions?
Jai Amiss. So I think as a key forward, that might be a chance, particularly with the Hipwood injury. Danaher, of course, has had his injury problems over the years. So I think if he's available, might be taken a few picks earlier, but if he's there, that could be a chance.
Well, hopefully Amiss is a hit. Richmond, next again. They've got their second pick inside the first round.
Yeah,
Jake,
so
I appreciate you appreciate that one.
Yeah, and he's actually quite reliable in front of goal or miss. So it's actually
that's good.
I can't wait for Brian Taylor to get hold of that one.
Yeah. But yeah, for Richmond, Jacob Van Rooyen, he could be a chance. So key position player. So you'll have to see. Otherwise, maybe if there's a potential slider, they could consider that also.
And the Swans make their first appearance on the board.
Yeah, so this might be an interesting one, but we might see the Warner brothers pair up there. So I think we could see Corey Warner possibly join Sydney. If he doesn't, maybe Fremantle in the second round could be a chance.
More brothers in the same team.
Mm, yeah, quite possibly. But he's more of an outside player versus his brother. So
okay. They could be combining for a few 1-2s then.
They very well might be.
The Ds, they get their pick as well.
Yeah, so they might look for a bit of an injection of speed. So possibly a Tyler Sonzi could be a chance. Otherwise, maybe a Campbell Chesser. There are a few I'm weighing up there with that pick, unless maybe a Van Rooyen makes it through.
And then the last pick of the first round that has been a little bit lengthened is Brisbane.
Yeah, so pick 20 to Brisbane after the bids. I think possibly a Darcy Wilmot might be a chance there. And they might also consider as well a bid for Josh Fay as well as a so GWS Academy, just a super boot of a defender. So it could be in the mix as well there.
Interesting. On that draft list, there are four clubs that weren't on it. Collingwood and the Dogs obviously were trying to stack their draft order later in the piece to try and get enough points to match these bids that are going to come very, very early. So we understand what they're doing. But there are two clubs that still won't have their pick until a little bit later, Carlton and Geelong. Where do you sort of see them heading with their first picks?
Yeah, so a Carlton would obviously love to get into the first round, but of course remains to be seen whether that would be possible. Yeah. I imagine they'd be looking to address their key defence needs with one of the picks. Maybe it's with a later pick they do that with a Charlie Dean, but if they look to strike early and make sure they get one, possibly Leeka Lear could be a chance around there. So
I've heard
now, he might drop to the 30s, but he's certainly one that would represent strong value if Carlton went that way.
How, like, it's something that Carlton would have really had to adjust with in the last few weeks with Liam Jones now gone, essentially. So it's kind of like all of a sudden, you know, the key defensive posts look pretty solid. And then now it's sort of like, well, we kind of need to adjust it all of a sudden. So it may be a case of they'd sort of settled on their order and all of a sudden they've really had to shuffle based on a list need that they probably weren't expecting that. Would happen that they'd actually a player that actually happened.
Yeah, certainly possible. And the other alternative as well, maybe they move Mitch McGovern back and look, is that sort of contested marking type good leaper? Maybe, but I'd personally be targeting a mature age key defender. There's quite a number of mature age key defenders in this draft. So whether it's that first one, whether it's a bit later, I think that's probably the way Carlton should be looking. Whether they do, it's hard to say in the 20s.
Yeah.
I don't have the crystal ball there to know exactly what Carlton will do.
I think you're asking a bit much for Lightning to strike twice with Carlton turning an average forward into a better than average.
I was going to say, he's got to get back in the team first before they move him anyway.
The Cats also have a pick. Is it in the 20s that their first one is?
Yeah, so it would be 22, but it would, of course, after bidding be moved back. So it might be around whether it's 24, 25. So a Mitch Nevitt, so a local midfielder. Geelong love their local talents. So, and they, of course, need those midfielders. So if he makes it through to there and he's not picked up before that, I think he'd be a really good chance. And also possibly Tom Brown as well, with his father, a former Geelong player as well, though not enough games to qualify for father son. So there are a few, maybe a Toby Conway as a ruck could be a chance there as well.
Interesting. Well, we anticipate greatly the full Phantom draft that you've got coming for us tomorrow, but good to get your thoughts early. Good to see what's going to change between now and then as well. So for those of you listening either Tuesday or Wednesday before the draft, you might notice some little bits and pieces have changed. So we'll keep you on your toes for that. But there's a bit of an elephant in the room, Chris. I want to get your thoughts on this. We mentioned it off the top, but two of the best three players in this draft are unavailable to the best of, or well, most of the competition. 17 teams don't have a chance of getting Dacos or Darcy. And last year, the number one pick, Jamari Ugle-Hagan, no chance that any other team aside from the Dogs was going to get him. We could keep seeing this happen where the way that academies, the way that father-son works is that, you know, even if you're the worst team in the competition, you're not going to be able to get the best player. Mm. What do we think of this format? Is it just a little bit out of the box that it's happened twice in 2 years like this? Or is it a concerning thing for someone who's watched drafts for many, many years?
It's something that's certainly improved over the years. So going back to the Gary Ablett era, you had the likes of an Ablett where you could bid on him early and really it would be sort of end of second round sort of stuff where you'd actually be sort of, I guess, matching with. So, and then moving on from there, so you had the likes of an Isaac Heaney where you could have bid on him at pick 1, 2, 3, doesn't matter. And they could just use a pick 17 and that alone. But now with the point system, there is an element of greater fairness. So there is that slight discount of 20%, yeah. But they still do have to manufacture all those picks. And there's really a lot of work that has to go into, I guess, summoning all those picks. And it can really compromise the rest of the draft as well. So
do you think the accountability still
can also hurt teams as well if they get it wrong or potentially if a team goes earlier than they expect and maybe they're not quite the best available, it can be a bit hard to juggle sometimes as well. But certainly a big advantage for whether it's a Collingwood or a Bulldogs getting a Dacos or a Darcy that early, who they obviously wouldn't be able to get under other circumstances.
Jake, players going number one or number two or number three that are untouchable to other clubs, is it something that you don't mind seeing given that clubs are still made accountable with the points system, or is it still just not quite passing the sniff test for you?
I guess I'm not a huge fan of it. I understand that the way it happens, and I think it's almost a bit of a, it's just a coincidence that we've essentially got it 2 years in a row where it's a player that's going to go really high up, but next year it might sort of revert back to what we're used to. But I think it's more if, for example, let's just say that Dacos was clear head and shoulders the number one player and you're North Melbourne, do you bother selecting him with the number one pick? Because, and I understand, and I kind of mentioned this before, I understand if it's going from pick 4 to 5, like you want to make other clubs accountable. But for the number one pick, do you not bother taking him because you know Collingwood will match? Do you say, right, we're just going to take such and such because we want him to come to the club as the actual number one pick? And how much confidence does it give that player? Yeah, I guess you could probably also say, well, there's also more expectation and pressure then as the number one pick. But I just feel like it, I don't know. I don't love it.
Mm. Well, Chris, this happened last year.
Mm. Yeah, it did. And the rules now changed, of course. So with the Next Gen Academies, to be specific, the rules still apply with the Father Sons and the Northern Academy teams. But for the Next Gen Academies, a bid would have to come after 20 to be matchable. So it's with Mac Andrew, he'd actually be a Melbourne Next Gen Academy, but there's no way of matching. And if there's a bid on Mitch Owens within the top 20, again, they've developed a guy, but unfortunately there'd be no way of matching if that were to occur. So
they're continually finding ways to make it fair, aren't they?
Yeah, they're progressing that way. And then next year that'll actually move out to bids after pick 40 for the Next Gen Academies. So, and ultimately then it will really just be the father sons and everyone's on the same ground with that. And then otherwise you've got the Northern Academy ones where maybe that's a bit more debatable, where that could be considered maybe borderline unfair advantage to some, but it can also be harder in those states because they don't produce as much football talent to necessarily retain guys, just as say a Gold Coast might have trouble with.
Well, you just look at the Bulldogs and they were just in a grand final and essentially they've got a pick one and probably a pick two or three this year. So it's, it's probably just the way the drafting cookies crumbled this year, but for the last 2 years, but
yeah,
it doesn't seem, I don't know. I think from a sort of a looking down and a high sort of view, it does seem a little bit, as you strange. Said, Matt, doesn't quite land with me at the moment.
ESPN.com.au/AFL. All the latest is going to be there if you want to check out some of Chris's work, and he's done a mountain of it. So, please give him the clicks and the engagement time that he deserves because he's put a hell of a lot of effort into it and we love what he does for us. One to finish off just before we wrap things up for the day and for the episode. Jake, the Gold Coast Suns, mate. Hugh Greenwood, the decision to allow him to be, well, delist him firstly, and then say, yeah, we're recommitted to getting him back in the club, only for another club to swoop on what is, who is one of the better contested ball winners in the league. I mean,
yeah,
what's going on?
Not just
there?
Their club, the league. And this is just, it's embarrassing for a club that, I don't want to sit here and smash Gold Coast, but for a club that has, we were just talking about it, so much trouble with player retention for a couple of factors, being a new club, being on the Gold Coast, being an unsuccessful club, let's face it. They've had their troubles keeping players, but they haven't helped themselves by just giving up two of their better players in Greenwood and previously the player that we've spoken about a lot, Jared Lyons, who's flourishing at Brisbane. It just makes no sense. And I kind of joked with you guys before, but I think there's real merit to it, that those two players that have walked out the club for nothing, Greenwood and Lyons, like, I know the club's only been around a decade, but you can seriously make the case that they're two of their best six midfielders in the club's history. Behind Gary Ablett and Tuke Miller, like, you can throw a blanket over quite a few players, and it's just insane that they've been able to walk. Can you explain to us, Chris,
yes,
exactly
this is
what
I
happened?
Want to know. What was the thinking, Chris?
Yeah, so basically, so Greenwood had a few more years to run. So he had 1 year to run with an option for the club to basically retain him for another year if a trigger's met. So, for me, it was a shock call. I view Greenwood as one of Gold Coast's very best players. So giving away a best 22 player, and as Jake was saying, with the retention issues on top of that, it's not a good look. And you're looking at someone where he was a top 5 or 6 contested ball winner in the comp in 2010, and this year he was still one of the highest pressure acts, tackles.
But why was he off the list? What was the reason behind Gold Coast taking him off the list?
Yes, they had to make room.
Supposed to be an interim period.
Yeah, so they had to make room for Greenwood ultimately. So going into the draft, you need 3 picks, and that can also include rookie upgrades as well. So it was really just a case of making room. So they've made room for both Greenwood and Thompson. So Thompson, of course, he hasn't been picked up, but with Greenwood, given his quality and being someone who would be best 22, I feel, for quite a number of teams. It was quite a surprise, actually, to me, almost, that there weren't more clubs interested.
Yeah,
in
I 100%.
Honestly.
Could have been a bidding war. Can the Suns do anything to avoid the worst on ground tag for their off-season performance? I mean, ignoring things like Collingwood and Jordan Ngoi and all that sort of stuff for a second, but in terms of raw list management, they're worst on ground, and I don't think they can be caught, can they?
Yeah, for me, it's worst on ground, certainly. It's the worst delisting I've seen since Jared Lyons. And Jared Lyons was someone where I was looking at him that offseason where I thought he was worth a first rounder. He was Gold Coast's best midfielder at that time for both of his years at the club. So delisting that, now delisting Greenwood, it's just...
It's embarrassing. There's no other way to put it. It's,
if Tuke
it's
Miller just... has another good year, Jake, watch out. He could be delisted.
Yeah, get him to the Blues.
Yeah. So I've joked mockingly on other platforms, but it's really just a case of Gold Coast are almost like a recruiting ground for other teams where they get all these really talented guys in the door through the draft. And you almost need to look at their reserves team and really look at, okay, who are some of the guys who might be available, or even perhaps with Greenwood being delisted, maybe their AFL team as well. So
they've done all the hard work and they've just given it up for nothing. It's just of every club. The Suns are the last club that can afford to do this.
And yeah. I'm worried there'd be future player exoduses as well, where you've got, whether it's a Lukosius, whether it's a Rankin, well, these guys want to stay on a club where they haven't made the top 8 yet. And
the players must talk and know, and they must say, what the hell are they doing? It's amateur hour here. We have to discuss it. I know it's not technically
it's not
draft,
strictly,
but
yeah.
It kind of is. It fits into the off-season discussions, and it's such a bizarre storyline and what actually happened. And I think a lot of people probably didn't, and myself included, I really had to scratch my head and work out what was going on, why they did it. It's kind of confusing as to what happened. And
it's confusing as to why they would have chosen him as the player to
that's my
to have
point.
To
yeah. Wouldn't you pick a 40th best player as opposed to, or someone that's far down the list, rather than potentially one of your 3 or 4 best players?
And the other thing they could have considered as well, why didn't they trade him? If they needed to make those list spots available, which they knew they had to do, well, why not trade him? Surely someone would be giving up something for him. I certainly know I would.
Fair play to North Melbourne. They're another club that's copped a bit of criticism for being unable to land star players. I'm not saying Hugh Green was an A-grade player, but he's a very, very good player, a very underrated player that will slot into their midfield, and it's a great pickup for them.
Yeah. It's a money ball it's a money ball pick ultimately, where it's a case of, well, if you've got Cunnington and if he's going to miss time, well, you slot Greenwood
in. What's the downside for North? There's no downside.
And the way that he plays, it is that club to a T as well. So I'm excited to see what he can produce for
North. He's a shin boner.
I'm putting it out there. He's a shin boner. He hasn't played a game for the club yet, but he's one of the great shin boners to be, I think.
Have you ever said the ball contested? Fantastic stuff. No other midfielder does that. So
you're very right. We're getting a little off topic. So let's wrap things up there. Chris, like I said, many thanks to you. You do a mountain of work and it is all there. ESPN.com.au/AFL if you want to see it. If you're not subscribed to our footy newsletter as well, highly recommend you do that because once a week on a Wednesday, we'll send a little, it's once a week only, I promise. We're not like JB Hi-Fi Jake, where we're bombarding you every day with emails and stuff like that. We are once a week on a Wednesday during the season, giving you all the best content from Chris, from Jake, from myself, from the podcast, from everyone. So ESPN.com.au/AFL, sign up to the newsletter, get around the draft stuff because the Phantom Draft is coming, the final Phantom Draft. Ahead of Wednesday,
Chris. You better get going and finalize. It looks like you got a few more picks to
Yes, I'll be finalizing it tonight. I'll need to really do all the pick moving. So with all the matching, there's a lot of moving. The picks arounds have to do all the mathematics behind that tonight. So it'll be every pick, every bid. And of course, after the drafts, I'll do a first round review and then a full draft review as well. So that'll be, of course, on espn.com.au/AFL.
Look at that. I don't even have to do the plugs anymore. How good. Chris, thank you so much for joining us, mate. Jake, good to talk to you as always. And to everyone listening at home, we'll speak to you in the next one.
Listen to all the latest episodes by subscribing to the ESPN Footy Pod, wherever you get your podcasts.